And we're joined on the Space Show by Dr. James Hansen, Professor of History at Auburn University and the author of the book First Man. Welcome to the Space Show, James.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be talking to you.
Terrific. And where are you speaking to us from, James, today?
I'm in Auburn, Alabama, where Auburn University is located, and I'm actually sitting in my office where I've been working on a new book.
Oh, a new book. Okay, so it doesn't stop?
No, it really doesn't, although I may be getting to the point where I'm going to start to slow down a little bit, but I don't know. I love to write, and if I can just get my computer set up in a way where my arm and shoulder doesn't hurt, if I'm sitting for 8 to 10 hours a day writing, I'll be in better shape.
Oh, right. Wow. Okay. Well, at least you're not in the old typewriter ribbon days, I guess.
No. They've been gone for a long time now.
Yeah, for sure. So, James, you've done – I've got the First Man book here in my hand. It says that you're an author of eight books, but this edition is from 2005. How many books have you done so far, and how many – well, you've got another one coming up by the sound of it, obviously.
Well, it may seem immodest to say I've lost count, but it's either 11 or 12 now that I've done. Of course, the Armstrong book, which came out in 2005, and then after Neil's death last August in 2012, you know, I wrote a new foreword for the book, and so it was reissued by Simon & Schuster in 2012, late in the year. And that's the book that, you know, I don't think I'll ever write one that's more significant. I don't know, maybe I can write something that would that might sell more, but that was never my goal. I always just wanted to. I probably could have sold more copies of an Armstrong book if I hadn't written such a long, detailed book. But I knew it was the only opportunity ever, really, to do a book about Neil, because he wasn't going to agree to any other biography. I just knew that, and so I just felt that I had to get everything recorded that anybody in future generations might be interested in.
Yeah. Well, I think I can speak for a lot of people saying that we're certainly glad you were able to do it, and Neil was agreeable for you to do it, and because I mean, I think, you know, we all agree he passed away unexpectedly, and as you say, to be able to capture that before his passing was really important for us and for people in the future. Could you perhaps give us a rewind and tell me how the project first came to be and how you managed to basically get Neil.
Yeah. Well, I had been doing studies in aerospace history for about 20 years when I first got the idea to write Armstrong's biography. Right out of graduate school, my first professional job was to write a book for NASA, and it involved Langley Research Center in Virginia, which really was the oldest of all the NASA facilities dating back to World War I. And it was a facility where basic aerodynamic research was done in wind tunnels and also in other sorts of facilities. And so I got very, you know, my job was to get real knowledgeable about the history of aeronautical research and development. And the story, you know, that the first book I did was called Engineer in Charge, and that was published in 85. And then Langley wanted a sequel because Langley, of course, you know, the first book just took it up to the establishment of NASA in 58. Before NASA, there was an organization called the NACA, the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics. And after Sputnik, when the federal government was trying to decide what to do to, you know, seemingly catch up with the Russians, they used the NACA as the nucleus for NASA. And so I wrote a second book called Spaceflight Revolution. And there then I became acquainted with R&D as it was related to, you know, aerospace. And then, of course, the projects that led to the first human spaceflight programs, and Apollo in particular. And, you know, at the time I had no idea how relevant those two books and my research would be subsequently to an Armstrong book. But, you know, Neil, who was born in 1930 and then went to school to study aeronautical engineering in the late 40s, and then became a, you know, he was a Korean War fighter pilot flying jet airplanes, and then became a test pilot. He made this transition in his own life and in his own career from aeronautical research really into aerospace then to space. And I had made the same transitions in my own career. And so I started thinking about that a little bit in the late 90s. And I knew that biographies or autobiographies had been written, you know, about or by most of the living astronauts. And of course, we didn't have anything from Neil. I was teaching a graduate seminar in space history at the time, and I was talking to my students about, you know, my idea to try to do an Armstrong biography, and they were very encouraging to me. But I knew that it was going to be, you know, different. Just from the stories I'd heard, I knew that Neil was difficult to get in touch with, and, you know, I just felt like it was a real long shot. But I wrote him. I got his address. There was a mailing address that went into actually a woman who worked for him for a number of years and took care of his mail and kind of triaged his mail, determining what was, you know, what he needed to see and what she could answer, right, you know, with form letters. And my letter was passed on to him, and he wrote me back a very nice letter, but it was basically, this was you know, about 2000, the year 2000, so he would have just been 70 years old then. And he was still busy with some, he was on some boards of directors for different companies. He was still active with that, and he just, I guess, hadn't decided yet that it was time to, you know, to sit down with anyone, and he wasn't even sure, you know, whether he wanted to write something about his own life story or not. So I got a really polite no from him, and I came back to my graduate seminar and told and showed them the letter. You know, it's kind of cool to get a letter with Neil's signature on it, but my students encouraged me not to give up, and for me to think of a way to, you know, to come at him again. And I waited a few months, and then I sent him a little box, a gift box that had copies of a couple of the books that I had written. I'd done a few more since then. Uh-huh. And it was really those books. And, you know, he read one of them apparently pretty carefully and got back in touch with me about that. And that opened up a conversation that eventually led, and I say eventually because it took nearly 2 years from the time I first wrote him.
All right.
Gave me the green light. So why he actually picked me in the end, you know, is a question I never dared ask, because, you know, once he gave me the okay, I was, you know, I didn't want to risk even asking why he was picking me, because I knew that he had several different authors, much more distinguished than me, that had approached him to write, you know, books about him, and he had always turned them down. So once I got the green light, I just went to work, and I didn't ask why.
Sure, fair enough too. Absolutely. So tell me, what was the process of writing the book? Was it researching his background, interviews, or how did it actually work on a day-to-day basis for you?
Yeah, well, I was like, there was maybe like three elements of it. First of all, you know, I had already, you know, in terms of the background to his story, the context of his own career in engineering and in test piloting and in the astronaut corps, you know, I'd already written quite a bit and researched quite a bit for 20 years before I took on the biography. So I didn't really need, I mean, I didn't need to know about, you know, the history of the X-15 rocket plane or, you know, the decision for lunar orbit rendezvous. I mean, I had researched a lot of that, and I had taught it, you know, independent of an Armstrong biography. So that was all ready to go. What I needed to do was plug in the details of his own life. And there it was really, there were two main elements for that. One was access to his papers, which he gave me, which were in various boxes and in storage in the Cincinnati, Ohio area. And then, of course, there were records related to him that I had not researched that belonged in the NASA archives or in the records of the federal government. For example, Johnson Space Center, which was then called the Manned Spacecraft Center, where the astronauts were and where Mission Control was located. All of the papers for Johnson, once they're out of the active administrative files, go to Fort Worth, Texas, go to the Federal Records Center there. So I had to go there. I had to go to other federal record centers.